You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And this is our State of X podcast. Ooh. We are going to be talking about the state of the X-Men line over at Marvel. It is about... The reason for doing this is it's about a year in. Back in July of 2024, the Krakoa era ended of X-Men. That was a big, bold, very different era with a lot of opinions in a lot of different directions that I'm sure we'll get into in a moment. But then they kicked off the From the Ashes era of X-Men, which has lasted until this day. We just to kind of lay out a couple of the titles, you had the three anchor titles, which were X-Men by Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman and Netho Diaz, Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez and Javier Garon, and Exceptional X-Men by Evel Ewing and Carmen Carnero. So those are the ones that are coming out, not necessarily multiple times a month, but more frequently than the other ones. They're sort of the flagship titles. And then beyond that, you had a bunch of spinoffs. I won't read them all off here, but NYX, Phoenix, Storm, Wolverine, X-Factor, X-Force, a bunch of other second wave titles. And then in the middle there, we also had a couple of different events. We had the Raid on Gray Malkin event, X-Manhunt, and then coming up, starting at the end of this month, about a week from when we're taping this, we're going to have Giant Size X-Men is going to be a series of one-shots by Jackson, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. They're going to spin out and change things once again. And then we're going to have a marker to... mark 1 year here with Hellfire Vigil, which is reminiscent to the Hellfire Gala that was a big feature of the Krakoa era. Hellfire Vigil is going to look back and memorialize that era. So that's sort of the groundwork here.
It's sort of like, I think what we're doing here is sort of like a checkup. Like the X-Men are what? They're in their 60s. Mm-hmm. So it's time for a colonoscopy, and we're doing it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was time for a colonoscopy 15 years ago, Justin.
That's right.
You got to get it at 45.
Justin, don't put this stuff off, man. You got to take care of this, all right?
I'm not 45, so I'm doing fine.
Yeah. When did you last see Dr. Nemesis, by the way?
Because yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Man, that his name is Nemesis, but he's my best friend. You know? I love it.
So regardless, that's sort of the lay of the land for this. And yeah, like you said, this is actually a checkup on the state of the X-Men, something that we, as well as everybody else, feels very passionate about. There's been a lot of talk, I think, recently in particular. There was a great podcast over at Sketched where they interviewed Jonathan Hickman, and he lamented very very nicely, by the way. Go listen to that podcast. But he was basically like, I'm paraphrasing here, it's one of the great regrets of my life that I didn't get to finish the Krakoa era the way that I wanted. He was very careful to talk about all of his fellow co-writers, his artists, editors. He said everybody was great. He 100% put it on himself, but said that there were a lot of circumstances beyond his control that led to it not quite ending the way he wanted. So I think that's why it's been top of mind for people to talk about the end of Krakoa era and comparing it to what's going on currently.
And just to a little info, more info on that, because he laid out a map, but then it was like sort of more successful and they wanted to go on longer than anticipated and his schedule just didn't work. And didn't they sort of use his map, but then went in their own direction? They use his map as a baseline.
Kind of. There's also apparently a lot of other things that happened behind the scenes.
I'm trying to politely raise my hand, Justin. If you could please go in the order that we have agreed upon, that would be great. My question is, what was the... What did he – did he get pulled off the project? Did he well, – did the sales – like what happened where
sure.
he
– Well, that's actually what I was about to address is,
great,
again,
thank you.
Highly recommend listening to that
so
podcast
odd.
And I don't want to get into the
Yeah.
Lead.
So stop listening to this. Go listen to that and then maybe come back. Is that what you're suggesting?
No.
Turn this off. Never listen to this again.
Never listen to this again. Thank you for your time.
It's been really great getting to know you, listeners, but goodbye.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Would you like to listen to The Source or Three Idiots Who Don't Know What They're Talking About?
We know what we're talking about.
No, we know what we're talking about. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because of the last era, but just to answer your question here, Pete, he says he's never going to talk about it. Like, Jonathan Hickman very specifically is like, I will never talk about
it. So we don't know what happened is what you're saying.
Reading between the lines, I think what we can say happened here is a combination of what Justin is talking about, as well as sales figures, as well as editorial direction, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't matter. We are comic book fans. That's how we're coming about it. So why don't we segue that into talking about the Krakoa era and its legacy looking a year back? I know Justin and I... definitely, we talked about it a lot. Like, we talked about that particularly during our Fall of X mini podcast. Pete, I know you were pretty negative about it in general, but
I just think
how do you feel?
It's interesting, though, because it's one of those things where it's like, it was such a huge swing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, the X-Men left. You know what I mean? They were like, fuck humanity. You guys suck. We're out of here. We're going to start our own little, like, amazing island, fuck island, and we're gonna, you know, we'll give you guys pills to cure your diseases so you guys will stay alive without us. But
Pete coming back from a vacation in Hawaii, amazing island, fuck island.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting because it was such a huge swing that it's upsetting to know that, like, the vision behind it didn't actually get to happen. Like, it got cut short for whatever reason, whether it was sales or schedules or whatever. And that's tough because, like, as a fan, as someone who wants to see, like, what this was and what it could have been or what it should have been, it's tough because it got cut short for some reason. So I had this plan. And then all of a sudden, from my perspective, I was reading along and I was like, okay, you guys are enjoying Fuck Island. But then the Hellfire Gala happened and everybody died. But then they were okay. But okay,
well,
great. You know,
but I think
so
the story.
The
story of comics is a great idea gets changed or interrupted, or like it's always going to be that way.
That's
so, like,
true.
I don't think, and like, I don't think, even now that we're back on Jonathan Hickman, I don't think he's like, oh no, like the curse, this is ruined. I think he's like, yeah, things changed. And like, you know, I wish I could have finished it. But like, he was talking in general about how happy he was with what was laid down in Krakoa. And I think that's a good place for us to start with talking about it. Like, it was amazing that all of this creative energy
got... Take it easy with that shit.
Just let me finish my sentence. It was amazing that all this creative energy...
Yeah, sorry. It is Justin's turn to talk now, as we previously established. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Yes. My bad.
But did I miss a meeting where we
did.
Had...
Yeah,
we
yeah,
started
yeah,
taking
yeah.
turns?
Rules of Order. You didn't read the Rules of Order before we got up?
Rules of Order. Great new X-Men run. the way that a big creative swing, like you said, Pete, using your own words, is to see it fully, like, brought to bear is hard. It rarely happens. And I think maybe that will inform what we're talking about in From the Ashes. Because it was weird. It was big. And doing something that big is going to be hard to maintain because, you know, there's a lot of change happening quickly. There's not a rattle in the machine that's coming through here. But I think the good far outweighed the bad in Krakoa.
Yeah, but it's also like he's such a huge name in comics. You know what I mean? If Hickman's not allowed to play out his whole idea, and again, we don't know what happened.
Yes,
but
sorry,
it would have been different to have him be able to execute this whole idea and then be able to be like, well, you know what I mean? Instead of what actually.
Yeah, just to be clear, I want to move on from this because I don't think there's any use in me describing what happened on a podcast and you guys responding secondhand to what I'm describing.
Well, it's not just the podcast. This has happened to all of us.
This is life, Alex.
We got to read something that didn't really kind of get to be what it was.
He is a team player. That's one of the big takeaways from that podcast interview. But to respond to what Justin is saying here, I do think that segues nicely into the From the Ashes era, because not to start off on a negative, because there's a lot of things that I've liked here. I think the big thing that has been holding back this past year of X-Men comics is it is sitting in the hangover of Krakoa rather than being a clean break from one thing to another. We felt this at the beginning, and I thought they were going to move past this at some point, and maybe they still will, but a lot of these titles felt beholden to the fans who felt so passionate about the Krakoa era, felt they were so seen and understood for the first time in this era of comic books. People really, really responded in a big way. Obviously, people like Pete, I understand you're making a face here, were upset as well, and people did check out of it. But what I'm saying here is, this is from a very outside perspective, from reading the comics, felt like they owed something to the Krakoa era and wanted these characters to be real bummed out for a while about it, when ultimately, I think, even though I did love the Krakoa era and I was bummed that it went away, it could have worked better with a clean break and a fresh start and a real less From the Ashes and more just pure, like, even if it's a base ground, get back to basics reinvention of the X-Men, rather than we have these three titles that I think there's some good things about all of them, but particularly I'll call out Exceptional X-Men that has Kitty Pryde bummed out constantly being like, I don't want to be an X-Men anymore. This sucked. What I had to do, I had to kill so many people at the end of the Krakoa era. And in Cutie X-Men, for a long while, for the first chunk of issues, Gail Simone's been doing a bang-up job. But all of those characters also being like, oh, man, we lost our island. What do we do now? Let's hang out in New Orleans and see what happens. And
New Orleans is a great place to hang out.
Totally great place to hang out. And my hope here, to jump ahead and just give, again, my overall broad view of this past year, is we're getting this Hellfire Vigil that looks back at the Krakoa era. But my hope is that between that and the giant-sized X-Men mini-event of one-shots, we are moving ahead and moving on to whatever the next thing is.
Now, let me ask both of you a question. As someone who didn't enjoy this, what did you like? And I'm not trying to pick a fight or argue.
We moved on from the Krakoa era. We're now talking about From the Ashes. We're talking about the state of X over the past year. Yeah. So.
And I think we said it. It's like the big creative swings, like big change, bold. And it feels like on what Alex is saying, like From the Ashes is inherently coming from a negative place. Like it's out of a fire, out of a conflagration, sort of out of a mess. And I do think it would have been more of a big move if this was more of a bright, like a look forward, sort of what are the X-Men following this big storyline that left them, you know, laid pretty low. Like, but what is their direction? What is their hope? What is their, like, the blue and gold team from back in the 90s was such a, like, oh, this is what we're doing. And it was a grand statement. Well, this area, this state of the From the Ashes era feels very much like, let's try out a bunch of stuff and sort of see what's hitting. And, like, testing the fences, that works. Like you find the books that are popular and the characters that are moving, you elevate those and you let go of the other ones and sort of move the characters in a different direction. It just makes for a little bit less from a fan experience is like, I can easily define what the X-Men are, which I think is actually very difficult right now.
For sure. Yeah. I do think it would be interesting though. And maybe we'll get this in the one shots where, you know, they've got to kind of at least answer for their choices a little bit of like, hey, we left you all and then came back and
left humanity. You mean?
Yeah.
The humans came to kill. Orcus came to kill them.
So you're You're saying basically the opposite of what Justin and I are saying is you want to dig down even more into the Krakoa era.
Well, it was such a huge swing, and then they left it, and we're like, hey, that never happened, right, guys? We're all cool. And it's
again, the opposite of what we're saying, because they're all sitting in it. What's your opinion about the past year of X-Men comics, Pete, after the Krakoa era?
Well, I do agree with JT Sizz a little bit that they have been trying to kind of like find out what's hot, find out where the kind of sweet spot of their kind of voice and what they're doing and what they're kind of fighting for and who's on what team and kind of piece themselves together. So I do hope that they do kind of figure things out and we can get back to a nice rhythm with the X-Men, because right now it's kind of all over the place where we'll have some issues that are kind of like sincere and kind of powerful. The Storm stuff was absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, even the Exceptional X-Men had some great issues, but it just kind of seesaws a little bit. So I'm hoping we get some kind of footing, but I do feel that like maybe kind of being like, hey, here's a statement about what happened, you know, like we're dealing with it this way and we're going to kind of move on or something, could help me as a fan kind of be able to let go of the bullshit that happened.
Well, wow.
Can I say, Pete, I've known you for a while. You will never let go of the bullshit that happened.
This guy loves bullshit in his hand. He loves it in his hand. He loves holding on to it, squeezing it.
The other day, I went to visit Pete at his house, and there was a bowl in his backyard. And he was like, come on, baby. Give me some of that sweet, sweet thing.
Eat your corn bowl so you can come out your butthole, said Pete. That's a quote from Pete.
Direct quote.
It's a quote from Pete.
I did want to bring up one of the notes we got here in Discord from one of our supporters. This is from Steve Hungsberg, says,
hey, Steve, what's up, bro?
I know Brevoort, that's Tom Brevoort, who is the editor of The Line, who has been overseeing the From the Ashes era so far, touched on this a few times in his weekly email, but I'd be interested specifically in your thoughts on how much runway a book should be given before cancellation, especially in the world of X. There were 10 issues, really enough time for NYX and X-Force, I guess. I wonder if this model for the non-mainstay book should focus more instead on limited runs. Some do like Mystique and Rogue Savage Land did, but if NYX and X-Force had used that approach, maybe readers would be willing to dip their toes in, knowing they'll get a contained story, and then the books could be extended if they turn out to be a hit, a la Absolute Martian Manhunter. I think this is a good thing to bring up now, specifically because of the experimentation thing. Brevoort has been very open in his weekly newsletter about this stuff and talked about
Yeah, you
about
love
this.
That newsletter.
I do. It's really illuminating in terms of his editorial processes. And he specifically has said in terms of the events, that is something he's experimenting in, because he's like, yeah, Raid on Gray Malkin had a different cadence than X-Manhunt. He's going to have a different cadence than Giant Size X-Men. And we're just kind of seeing what works. So to address that overall topic, as well as what Steve's saying, and he... any thoughts on that? Should they have shorter runs than 10 issues?
Well, I think Steve is right in the fact of like when he was kind of listing some of the like X-Force, there's a lot of great characters in X-Men, and it would be a cool time to maybe try some, like we've seen with Storm or Nightcrawler or whoever, Kitty Pryde, just... you know, let's kind of dive deep into these characters and explore what's going on with them and kind of how they're handling all this stuff. So I do think it's a great opportunity to have some kind of a fresh start or restart with these characters, and also just kind of explore their background in new ways. So I do think 10 issues is plenty. I do think that like when things get going, it takes a little bit. But yeah, I'd love to see them really try and invest in some of these amazing characters that we love and maybe give them a little bit more spotlight than they're used to.
Well, I think I like the note of doing limited runs that can then be broken up into seasons, maybe, because I do think that'll give these books more intention at the outset. It'll have more of a premise. Like, to take a couple of these, I feel like the Mystique book that came out had a pretty strong focus, and I think we liked that because
of the
espionage idea that was behind it, and like it felt very intentional with what it's doing. While like a book like the main X-Men book feels a little lost in what it's doing. It feels like it's doing too much all the time. sort of spinning its wheels and still telling these mostly like one-off, but still big ongoing storytelling that feels a little like all over the place. And not that I'm saying we should have the X-Men itself be a limited run, but if all of these books had a little bit more like logline premise at the outset, I think it would make for more satisfying composed books.
It's interesting. I was about to disagree with you guys, but I do think you make a really good point there, Justin, calling out these specific titles and looking through some of the other ones as well. Like Sentinels by Alex Pachtendahl and Justin Mason. That was another one, like very clear premise, limited amount of issues. One that we've really liked a bunch that's coming out now. Cable, Love and Chrome by David Capos and Mike Henderson. Same sort of thing.
Like a great Cable book.
About like the clear log line. The reason I was going to disagree is like, I don't think necessarily the premise of, oh, people are really into miniseries works the same way, because I do think they look at it as like, that's not as important as the ongoing titles. So that doesn't drive sales necessarily, but it is a good look forward in terms of the plot of a story and also the eventual trade collection.
Well, I would throw out then, like, because what are these books that all ran for 10 issues are essentially miniseries that just don't have a clear end. They're just like, whoops, hurry, we're not selling enough, so we have to end this. So I think if they at least treated an ongoing title like it was a miniseries, and we're like, okay, let's do 6 issues that is the introduction of what we're doing here, and then a second arc that's another 6, boom, that's a year, then we can check in and see. Or if you want to keep it to 10 issues, like 6, 2 and 2 or 6 and 4. And that's our first couple or 3 arcs. And then like, I think, cause I do think fans will get on board more. Readers will get on board more when it's like, oh, this is the book about that. Like we always joked about it, but when the X-Force book with all the Sharp characters was it was like, that's about Sharps. They're going to cut
that
stuff.
That was great though.
Yeah.
That was
that's what I'm saying. That clean log line. While this X-Force book, I'd be like the log line of that. Well, Forge has a machine. That machine guides them through by traveling through different dimensions and spaces. And he has a random team of people who come through. One of them died because she came back at the end of that. Then he had Tank, who actually was, sorry for the reveal here, but that was a secret mutant the whole time. You guys know who it is? Who it is? It was Colossus the whole time. Well, big surprise, it was Tank. It was Colossus. He looked the same. He wore a mask. It was the same guy the whole time. Of course, it's going to be him. Then he had all these other random X-Men, a lot of who had the same powers. He had Sage. He had all these other folks who were just like doing things. And they were all confused all the time. Why are we doing this? Where are we going? Forge is like, I can't tell you. It's this machine that takes me to different places. And we're going to go to these different places and do these things. But there was no other intention behind it besides Forge having this funny little bracelet.
There you go. Clap, clap, clap. Yeah.
Clap, clap, clap.
Not to get too wonky about it, but it was interesting that you called out 6 issues, because that's another thing that's been sort of sticking with me a little bit. The fact that these titles were canceled at 10 issues, specifically X-Factor, X-Force, and NYX all ended there. And I think we could agree, whatever we liked about each of these titles, those last issues were crazy packed, rushed up.
Yeah.
Like, and I did like things all about each of them, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going on necessarily behind the scenes, but it does seem like Marvel, at the very least, has changed from doing 6 issues per trade to 5 issues per trade, which is probably what leads to the 10 issue arc things. And I have to imagine they're communicating that in some way to the writers, but that is not what's coming out in the comic books, to your point. And
Well, I was just going to say, on those comics that you mentioned, like, I feel like X-Factor had, like, it was, X-Factor is always this type of book. It usually has like a slightly different point to it. This one is a little more comedy focused, a little more like satirical, formerly that like, X-Force or X-Statics did in the line. So like, I don't know, I'm bummed. That's the one I'm sort of the most surprised about that wasn't working, because it felt like it was the most what you would expect and what you would want out of an X-Factor book. From the other ones, like, I loved NYX. And I feel like Alex and I were split. Like, you loved Exceptional X-Men that were, I think the issue there is those two books were occupying almost the same spot, but like with different teams, different creative teams, different characters. And I just felt like NYX was working for me more, felt like more of an underlying like philosophy, vibe, youth movement, while Exceptional X-Men was sort of like, a little more like dealing with the politics of like being a young mutant, that felt like that's what a lot of Krakoa was about. The Exceptional felt like it was looking back, NYX felt like it was looking forward.
I hear you. I mean, not to contradict that or spend too much time on that, but I think the reason, frankly, Exceptional X-Men is hitting for me is it feels like a CW drama in comic book form. Like, it is. There's not a lot of action. There is a lot of character interaction more than anything. There's dating.
Action over action, the Alex Zalbin story.
I don't know. I like it. I think Evel Ewing is doing a really good job of writing these characters, and that really resonates with me because I do like that sort of thing. I also liked a lot of NYX. I feel like it just sort of got lost in the sauce of what exactly was happening at all times, and it got muddled because it got stuck in the middle of the X-Manhunt crossover, which... frankly, not to slag off anything that anybody was doing involved in here, was definitely for me a low point of this year so far, just because the story did not seem to connect from issue to issue.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm hoping they're going to maybe do kind of like a Schism 2 Electric Boogaloo situation where you kind of take the mutants.
Schism is what you want back?
Well, yeah. Hold on. I think Pete brings up an interesting point here. Go ahead, Pete.
And then because there was this big thing and it kind of divides the team, so it'd be nice to kind of have a little bit of a team conversation of like maybe the mutants who stayed, who were like, hey, we don't want to leave these humans who we've been protecting this whole time, versus the people who were like, I'm pro Fuck Island, and maybe we can kind of have a little, because instead of it being like, hey, Scott Summers is a shitty leader over and over again, maybe we kind of kill him off and get some new teams here and kind of have a schism.
I was kind of with you, but I do think you're onto something here, because what they are clearly trying to push, forgetting about Exceptional, which is kind of the side, they're doing their own Chicago thing for the moment, but they're trying to push X-Men and Uncanny X-Men as the two flagship teams, to use Justice Here of the Blue and the Gold, but the philosophies are not clear. Like, it's not even as clear as when it was Cyclops versus Wolverine, which was also a little muddier than the Xavier Magneto divide that they're always trying to ape all the way down the line. Like, at this point, I could not tell you what the difference between Cyclops and Rogue in terms of their two teams are, other than Cyclops is like, I'm very angry and I live in Alaska, and Rogue's like, I'm very conflicted about everything and I live in New Orleans, which are not philosophies. So if they were able to do something like, we have two very different views on the future of mutant kind, like Pete was getting there in the first 95% of what he was saying, I think that could be interesting and it could push it forward, but that's not what we're currently getting, even though that's what the text is telling us.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think we are getting that, except the characters haven't quite said it. Like, Rogue's team is like scooping up all of these mutants that have been lost in the, you know, the spread from out of Krakoa, while Scott's team is very much like, we're going to still be a superhero team, and we fight nasty, like, who knows who's coming for us.
But they're all doing that. Like, they're all doing that. All three of those teams are, like, scooping up mutants that are left to the side. It just so happens that Cyclops' team is scooping up mutants who are regular people who have been changed into mutants, and then also there are all these other, like, very 90s style villains.
So what you're saying is you guys want more on the scoop, you know what I mean?
More, like, scoop.
Let's focus on the scoop a little bit.
Scoops.
I would just argue, like, there's definitely a clear philosophical and emotional difference. Like, the Scott Summers X-Men team is unemotional, or the emotions are all harsh. It's like anger driven almost, or like, well, I'm out of options. I guess I'll just probably die, is what Magneto basically says all the time. Mm-hmm. And the Uncanny X-Men team is much more like emotionally driven. Like, I think the way that Gail Simone's writing that is very much like Rogue is like, I don't know exactly what to do here. I'm like looking for the skill she needs to be a leader.
Right. We're saying the same thing, but again, I don't think those are philosophies. Those are our emotions. And that's fine. They can be emotion things, but the way that they are textually framing it up when these two teams come together is like there's a philosophical difference there, and I don't know what it is. Just to throw out some other titles that we haven't really talked about yet, because there are a lot more other things in the line. There's the Phoenix book that I think we read the first couple of issues and it was pretty solid, but we fell behind on a little bit. There's Wolverine that I think
I think that's a larger conversation, because the Phoenix book, I feel like it's a little – that's like she's so powered up that it just felt a little like I'm not sure exactly what this is. I wish that was about her and Scott from an emotional point of view, and it felt like it got a little bit into that, but then it was like she also has to do this planet stuff with aliens we didn't really know too much about. But the bigger question is, what's up with Wolverine? Wolverine is a bit missing right now, I think, in the X line. He's the adamantine.
He's in Uncanny X-Men.
He's raising Wendigos on his own. You know what I mean? He's trying to keep
Wendigos.
See,
those are two very different things. You just said Wolverine in the Uncanny X-Men book, he's like, just he's waking up in jorts being like, you guys need something? And I'm like, that's not a point of view.
Come on.
Wolverine in his main book is like fighting the adamantine, an arc that wasn't my favorite. And I was like, he usually has a guiding principle. He usually has like a mission he's on, like about his past or about getting adamantium on his bones or off his bones or something. And
don't
like,
forget to drink your Ovaltine moment there. That was ridiculous.
From Uncanny X-Men. But I feel like I think the X-Men line needs a strong Wolverine, and we don't have it right now.
Maybe part of it that you're feeling, and correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, but maybe part of it is that the Wolverine book does not feel like the flagship Wolverine book. It feels like Wolverine side missions. And part of that is, yeah, he's off on this thing that takes place kind of like between the pages of other books. Meanwhile, he is in Uncanny X-Men. He is in Deadpool and Wolverine. He's in Weapon X-Men. He's in the just launched Spider-Man and Wolverine title. So there's all these things.
That's crazy book.
Yes, that is a crazy book, but that's not part of the X-Men line. That's part of the Spider-Man line, I believe, so we're not going to talk about that. But my point being, like,
it could affect the
there's
X-Men
a lot
line,
of Wolverine, but it's sort of like, well, we gotta step back and kind of let him just be there. Just kind of live.
But we have to do that? That's a crazy idea. Let Wolverine live?
No, I'm not like, saying that. That's what I think the impression is happening. And I think part of it that I will, to say something positive, is they are trying to push other characters to the forefront and give them their time to shine. Pete's already shouted out Storm, that I think they very clearly have been like, we're going to push her as hard as possible with her own awesome solo title.
It's fantastic.
As well as putting her on the Avengers. But then also there's a couple of other titles that I think we've liked. Like there's the Psylocke solo book, which is pretty solid. Yeah. There's the Magic book, which is
great, the Magic book.
Really good. Yeah. So I don't know. And those Psylocke and Magic are ongoing, just to address the question from Steve earlier, which I think is good. Like it gives them a chance to really hopefully tell a long form story, which that's the other part of that equation, is if they're just doing a miniseries, it's like, yeah, that's just a story about them doing a thing. Like the Rogue Savage Land thing, there's an upcoming White Queen story. Those are all just sort of legacy pocket back in the day things. But something like Psylocke and Magic are allowing these writers to add new things to the mythology for these characters, which is really good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I think, like, talking about the successful, the things that I think are creatively successful, like the, we've named a lot of these, but the ones I think are really working right now are Uncanny X-Men, the Psylocke book, the Magic book, the Storm book. I feel like those are taking some of the big swing creative ideas from Krakoa and finding a place for them going forward. Like, especially the Storm book, I feel like is just moving so quickly with big ideas, elevating the character, And it's not even staying in the X universe. Like, she's in space dealing with, like, the Celestials and stuff like that. Like, that's different for an X-Men book. And and doing it in a, like, not too fussy way, like a big six-issue arc where Storm's like, I must challenge the Celestials. No, it's just, like, boom, moving through it. She's, like, going around through Thor and, like, now I have to go face my punishment, or I'm being accused of something bad from the repercussions out of X Manhunt for holding onto Charles Xavier when he was on the run. Like, that's cool. I think that's, I wish all of the books had that level of pace and creative juice.
Also, while we're shouting out like other good books, the Rogue Tim Seeley Savage Land is fun.
Yes. Yeah. We just mentioned that one. And there's a couple of others we haven't mentioned. We didn't mention the Helverine book by Benjamin Percy and Rafael Yanko. Laura Kinney, The Wolverine by Erica Schultz and Giada Belviso. And there's definitely at least one more that I'm missing somewhere in there. But I do want to shout, I know this has been my
Wolverine
soapbox.
Revenge.
Yes. Which is like side thing. That's also in that side pocket, but fun book.
I like Wolverine side quests. It's a fun
Wolverine side pocket.
I know this has been my side soapbox recently, but one thing that I do think connects the titles that we're giving shouts out to is that they write for the issue. Like, that's something that really jumps out to me about Storm and Magic in particular, is there are these overarching arcs for the characters, but they still work as a like little 20 to 22 page package at the same time, which is something I compare that directly, not to slag off this book too much, but the X-Men book, which is every single issue, they're just like still fighting in the snow. Just sometimes they cycle out who they're fighting, but mostly they don't. It just keeps going that way. And, and Magneto's like, gonna get out of my chair, now I'm the Sentinel, here we go.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the events. I know we touched on those, but again, we had Raid on Gray Malkin, which was a 4-part story, X Manhunt, which was 8 parts. And coming up, obviously, we haven't read it, but we have the giant size X Men thing, which for anybody who doesn't know, that's going to kick off with a one shot. Miss Marvel is set back in time to various highlights of the X Men's different era. She's going to start off in the Death of Phoenix saga. Then she's going to go to Age of Apocalypse and other little things like that. And beyond the main story where Miss Marvel is trying to figure out what's going on and what's wrong in time, there's going to be backup stories, revelations, backup stories by different writers that are going to tease upcoming things. So any general thoughts about the events in this era so far?
Well, I mean, Raid on Gray Malkin, I feel like as like a mini event, you know, I liked that idea. It was bringing together the X-Men and Uncanny X-Men. They fought. We got into some of that schism stuff that you guys were mentioning and loving. Everything. We loved everything Pete said in that crossover. X-Manhunt, I think we had our criticisms of, as it was like sort of messy. It didn't really amount to much. And it was seemingly all about getting Charles Xavier into space to deal with his daughter. Mm-hmm. Something that was like, at the end of it was like, and stay tuned for what that's about. And I was like, that's what this, there was no story there, really. Yeah. And like the most interesting thing that's come from it is what I just mentioned in the Storm book, that she is being charged by the U.S. government with aiding and abetting a criminal in Charles Xavier. And I just think also, and I mentioned this before, like the way that Professor X has been positioned in the X universe as this like liar and like bad person, that's bad. Like, I want them to fix that or change that or just move him into a different role or something, because he is like, for as much as like I think it's ridiculous that Pete hates Cyclops, like Cyclops and Professor Xavier as like they're too good, we have to undercut them, was I think a mistake. That was something that they did a long time ago and they continue to do. And I want them to move past that. Let's make our heroes heroes again so that we can buy into a larger idea of what the X-Men are in the post-Krakoan world.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is like baked into the X-Men is a bunch of villains reform and join them and then become evil again and then become good again and back and forth and back and forth. So harping on the fact that like what Xavier has done has gone too far is crazy. When they're like, yeah, we're going to team up with Sabretooth for a little while. No big deal. Yeah,
a wild murderer. So Juggernaut is like the main hero of the X-Men book. And I'm like, yo, this guy was a villain forever. He tried to kill everybody.
Yeah, get over it, man. That's part of your premise. I do want to bring up another comment from our Discord. And by the way, if you want to join our Discord, patreon.com/comicbookclub.
Yeah, we get into it.
Captain McGlue says, do you think the criticism is
captain?
The captain.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he used to be lieutenant, but he was promoted, so that's pretty cool. Do you think the criticism is reflective of the book quality or a sense that the books are stagnating or moving backwards after a much-hyped period of growth, I assume referring to Krakoa? I remember thinking during the Krakoa run, because of the mutant resurrection stuff, that when that era kind of collapses, we get a line of X-Men books where literally every X character is back on the table, and it doesn't feel like any of the X-Men books are currently taking advantage of that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point the captain brings up, because once they started with the old eggification where anybody could be alive and nobody could die, I really thought we were going to kind of see a lot of old characters and kind of bring people back and, have a little bit of a rebirth with that. But they really didn't. It was like, oh, nobody could die. But then it was like, oh, no, never mind.
Well, but I think the response of, like, from Krakoa, it was like, everyone's back on the table. I think maybe the natural creative response there is like, okay, we've done a long time with bringing back old characters. From the ashes, let's create some new characters. And I think that's what the line is really doing here a lot. Like, Uncanny X-Men has a whole new young team. Exceptional X-Men brought in some new characters. I feel like NYX, same. Like, I feel like they're like, let's try to boost up some new characters that can become the next generation of X-Men. Because at its core, the X-Universe is all about youth. It's the core nature of it is like youth coming up, learning from a mentor, Professor X, Cyclops, Pete's original mentor, whoever it might be. And like, again, maybe they're just building back to that idea a little bit right now as well.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, but I do think that the problem I have is like, why am I start caring about a new character when we have all these great old characters that we can explore? And I just don't feel like starting
to care about something.
Yeah. Oh man,
I'm exhausted
because it always lets you down.
I was laughing specifically about like time. That gets to a core of literally everything about Pete. Why start caring about new stuff when there's all this old stuff that I still care about?
Yeah. All right, fine.
He has only so much real estate in his cold heart.
The criticism, all right?
Yes.
And I agree, because that's the future. You know what I mean? Because we want to get new readers. We want to get young people into this world. I don't know why they would want to, but I do think it would be awesome. You know,
Pete, what if the next Wolverine is lurking in an Uncanny X-Men?
Dude, what are you talking about? X-23 is right there. You know what I mean?
That's kind of the same Wolverine, but all right.
No, how dare you?
I also just want to mention, for a point of clarification, in terms of all the characters, aren't there still like 250,000 mutants who are somewhere else?
Well, and aren't they on Mars?
Yeah, well, yeah. No, there's Mars, but then there's also like
of course.
Yeah, where they took Krakoa. So there, there are
Krakoa
a bunch of them.
Is continuing.
Yes,
technically.
Exactly.
That's what everybody
let's
wants.
Let's start to wrap up here, though, by talking about what's next for the X-Men, or what do we want to see going into year two, starting in July?
I mean, I think across the line, or just editorially, I feel like, driving towards something that feels like an organizing principle. Like, and I get like testing the fences with all these different team books and characters, great. But like, what is the big threat? Especially taking the full view outside of the comic book world, we're headed for the X-Men in the MCU. Mm-hmm. So they have to be building toward like some very big defining moment in the comics as well. What is that? Is it a turn back toward a traditional like blue and gold Claremont style thing where like you have a team, a core team, that's the flagship book, they're the main characters, and everything else feels like it's below that or a side pocket to that, as opposed to now it feels like it's scattershot. All of these books feel almost equally important, with Uncanny X-Men and X-Men sort of a little bit above the fray. Like, I think we want a little more composition here as we're moving into whatever the next era. I don't think we're going to call this the From the Ashes era. So, like, whatever the next era, like, I want to point toward that a little harder next.
I it would be cool if, you know, and I think we're going to get there after the one-shots of, you know, kind of what's next. But I would love if they kind of took two characters that didn't get to spend a lot of time together, like maybe a Rogue and a Storm, and just kind of did some like quality time with these characters, really kind of explored who they are and have them team up and really kind of kick some ass and have some fun. I think that would be a blast.
I not to say this twice in one podcast, but I think that's a really good point, Pete, because
Oh my God, that's weird.
I don't know.
Schism and Rogue and Storm teaming up and having fun?
I think the thing that's missing is fun. Like, this, to the point that you were saying, Justin, my big takeaway here is this past year has been a lot of stuff. Like, there's been a lot of titles coming out. We didn't bring it up, but another big thing that happened over the past couple of weeks was Rob Liefeld going in hard on the X-Men line, which came off as a little bit of sour grapes. But as usual with Rob Liefeld, there was some stuff that was like, all right, you're not 100% wrong in terms of the X-Men line being more feeling to the fan as more business driven than story driven. And I think that's the big thing. Like, looking at these titles, when there are some of them here, like, I think I'd shout out Cable, Love, and Chrome. That's a fun literal title for a book.
Yeah.
And then it pays off of the book. And be like, yeah, that's what it is. It's Cable doing crazy time travel stuff, falling in love. It's
something we haven't seen a character really do before. Too.
Exactly. So that's getting back to the point that Pete was making. That's what I want to see in the second era is like, not, okay, what do we feel beholden to? What do we need to put out because we've ran it through, you know, our promotion department and decided that's going to hit the sales? Like, what's fun? What are we going to be excited about? Because what came out with the Kirkara era in every single interview, including interviews that we did, is these people loved doing it. They loved writing it. They were excited about it. Not everything worked, but they felt passionate about what they're writing. And I don't quite get that from the wash of titles that we're getting over the past year. I'm sure the writers and artists do care about what they're putting, to be clear. Yeah. But I'm not getting that like, oh, shit, oh, this is exciting. This is like a little gift that I'm getting every week. It feels like an obligation to check in on the news of the X-Men most of the time.
That's interesting. And like, I think there's some truth to that. And that's why like an overall philosophy would help a little bit. But I also think a lot of these books are just not quite what we expect from them. And that's maybe why there's a little itch on each of them. Like Uncanny X-Men feels like an Excalibur book.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men feels like an X-Force book. NYX feels like a New Mutants book. And if they just like jockey it a little bit and put them in sort of their spots and then tell us what a flagship X-Men book is now, because that's what I think is missing, is that big time, big statement, like the book that they play baseball in. That's what we need. Like, we need them to play ball.
Well, and I'll throw out there that the X-Men issue where they did that with the Avengers was probably the best issue of that so far. Because it also, the other thing is like leaning towards the writer's strengths. Like, Jed MacKay is really good at writing fun character interactions.
Yes, Black Cat. There's a reason Black Cat was like the title that made, that brought him to the scene.
And I think Itch is a really good way to put it, where it feels like there's a little too much thinking going in everything rather than feeling, rather than emotion, rather than like, ooh, this would be cool. Oh, Jed MacKay is good. Like, give him a heist book, you know, like give him an X-Men heist book or something like that. Gail Simone is great at the character interactions, but the stuff that's really popping from that title is the weird messed up things he's doing. Like, it's clearly like, oh, let's take these four mutants and send them down a dark hole where they encounter a weird, terrifying mutant. That's the thing that's really popping and working in that book.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I want to see them like, let the writers get weird. Let them take some chances. Let them go crazy a little bit.
Yeah. And I think fix Wolverine a little bit here.
What
he needs, and by that I mean, I think he needs
chop
to be
off
neutered.
His scrotum,
I think he needs to be neutered. Yeah. He needs to chop off his scrotum. I don't know if you know what neutered means.
I don't.
I think, but I mean that seriously, like get him like a little bit on a road.
All I'm
somewhere.
Saying is I think Magneto should pull out his scrotum.
Good.
That would be a great cover. Could you imagine that? Fatal Attraction.
No, I don't want to imagine that. And I don't think, no.
Wolverine definitely has an adamantium lined scrotum.
You try to say things that you're smart and well-educated and well-read, and then you say something like that, and it all goes out the fucking window, man.
You think he's got a lot of, like, micro-adamantiums just collecting in different parts of his body?
Absolutely. That's a great plot line. That would really change things.
Self-healing, you assholes. He's not going to have that.
Not his scrotum, though.
Self-healing? He still has a bunch of metal
in his bones. Claremont established that in Uncanny X-Men 281.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm the best there is at what I do, but my scrotum doesn't heal.
Not a thing.
Was that a good place to end this podcast?
Nope. That's why Wolverine's so irritable all the time.
And you wonder why people don't want to join the Discord.
A chafed metal scrotum.
If you want to join the Discord, there's plenty more chat like this. Let us know about your thoughts. We would actually love to hear what you think about the X-Men line. Feel free, of course, to disagree with us. What titles have been popping? What is working for you? What hasn't been working? Keep the conversation civil, because we know everybody, whatever we've said here, is working very, very hard to put out these books. And yes,
they all love comics.
They all love comics, and they want to make them good. We're just talking from the perspective of what we want to see better with a franchise that we absolutely love. And like we said, if you want to support our podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about X-Men, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Westchester Mansion.
And help control the Wolverine population. Have your bub spayed or neutered.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.